Another thing I wish that Canadians knew is that our healthcare system cannot function without caregivers. We absolutely rely in a very silent way, in many ways, on caregivers, but they are integral to our system and to the individual outcomes for people.
Yes.
That was Amy Kupal, CEO of the Ontario Caregiver Organization. In this episode, we discuss the services and resources that the OCO offers, Amy's own caregiving experiences, and the essential role caregivers have within the health and social care system.
Hi, I'm Xian Xiao.
And I'm Sammy Winemaker. We talk to people who have information and tips on how to unlock a better illness experience.
The waiting room revolution starts right now.
So, Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
Yeah, well, we are excited to have you.
Yeah, so you are the CEO of the Ontario Caregiver Organization. So we'd love if you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and the current role that you do.
Sure. So as the CEO of the Ontario Caregiver Organization, I get to oversee all of the amazing programs and services and supports that we have for Ontario's 4 million caregivers. So these are family members, friends, and neighbors taking care of someone's physical, mental health, emotional, spiritual needs in their caregiving capacity. And so we have lots of supports for caregivers, like our 24/7 helpline in English and French and available in translation in over 100 languages. We have peer mentorship, peer support, coaching, counseling, and tons of other information and resources for caregivers, like our own podcast series and webinars that are available on replay and live, and lots of other things for caregivers to help make their journey and experience easier along the way and to get the support that they need.
Wow. I mean, this isn't just a job for you, right? I mean, caregiving is personal to you. So are you comfortable sharing a little bit about your own experiences caregiving?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think, like many people who are caregivers, I didn't know that I was one for a really long time. So I started my caregiving journey as a young caregiver. My brother had quadriplegia cerebral palsy. So, and I'm younger than him. So I was born into this world where caregiving was really a part of our family life, and everybody played their own role as a part of the circle of care with my brother. And that was just normal. That was just the things that we did, and that involved lots of day-to-day things around the house, but he also had frequent hospital visits, and I was actively involved in that. My brother wasn't able to speak for himself, so we always had family members on 24-hour shifts in the hospital, and that was a part of our lives. And then I was also a caregiver for my mom through her cancer and palliative care journey, and that was a totally different experience. I was an adult then. As a parent, that relationship with your parent is also different than that sibling caregiving relationship. And so we moved through that process together, again, as a family, a circle of care with my dad and my sister. And now my dad is in his mid-80s, and I'm his primary caregiver because we live in the same city. And I have this virtual caregiving connection with my sister, who is a distance caregiver, and we find creative ways to divide up the caregiving responsibilities. And the fundamental breakdown is, if somebody's required physically, it's my job. If it's something that can be done virtually, it's her job. But, you know, we share and we divide things up. And each of those caregiving relationships has been so different and so unique. And so I think that also reminds me, you know, we've got 4 million caregivers in the province and 4 million unique caregiving experiences based on the relationship, the evolution of the caregiving needs, the caregiver themselves, the person receiving care. So, you know, every circumstance is always different.
You know, it's incredible how much experience you've had, and how each experience has been so unique. I'm thinking about, as you're talking, how unprepared physicians are. I can only speak for physicians in their training to work with caregivers in every unique situation, that they don't really understand that the caregiver is an integral part of the care team. They're not just the person that drives to the appointments with the loved one or gets the updates, that you're really, really a critical, a pivotal part of the care team. I know this because I work in people's homes. So there's nothing that can be done unless, you know, the care team, which is the family, is involved in negotiating that and et cetera, et cetera. But that's a very unique experience that I have caring for people in people's homes. It's not part of our training as physicians.
You know, this is one of the biggest pieces of work that we're doing at OCO is really shining a light on the role of caregivers as a part of the care team and increasing that recognition of caregivers in all settings, primary care, home care, in and outpatient hospital care, long-term care, and other congregate settings. You know, caregivers are everywhere that patients or residents are, right? In the home, in the doctor's office, all of these places. But they are also the through line through all those experiences, right? So they are usually the keeper of the history, the one who has that deep knowledge and understanding about what's worked, what doesn't work. And I agree with you. I've had this in my own experience as a caregiver, and it's one of the things that we hear all the time is that people want to be recognized for not only the knowledge and capacity that they have, but also the responsibility that they have as a caregiver. Yeah. And we hear this a lot at transition times, right? That caregivers are not necessarily included in transition planning, discharge from hospital, for example. But who's going to be holding the bag on the transition plan?
Right.
It's the caregiver. So including them so that it's a successful transition plan is important for everybody. So I always feel like it's a no-brainer, but it is something that we still hear about as a very common issue.
Yeah, I mean, the patient might be physically well enough to go home, but that's only one ingredient. You know, we must also engage the caregivers to see, you know, how realistic is this? And every situation is different.
So one of my questions for you is, you know, clearly you've been at this for over 5 years, I think, OCO has been around, and you've been talking to thousands of caregivers across Ontario. What do caregivers say they need the most?
Well, they say a few things. One of the top things that they say is respite. They need a break. They need an opportunity to balance their caregiving role and commitments with other things that they need for themselves. And so it's not that they don't want to be doing their caregiving responsibilities by and large. There certainly are people who are facing challenges with, you know, expectations related to caregiving, but by and large, people want to be doing what they're doing as a caregiver. But a break is what we all need to just keep ourselves energized and balanced and to take care of our other commitments, you know. Well, more than half of caregivers work, so they're balancing work and care. We know that the biggest population of caregivers is in that sandwich generation where they've got younger kids at home and maybe caring for a parent who's an older adult. And so, you know, they have lots of things that they need to balance in their lives. So respite is big. Support for their own mental wellness is another component. And we've certainly seen in our spotlight report year over year, the numbers related to burnout, related to those feelings of isolation and loneliness, unfortunately, keep going up. And so the things, you know, that caregivers need are around ways to talk about their experience, get support for their experience, normalize their experience. It is an incredibly lonely thing. I mean, you talked, Sammy, about going into people's homes. There's an intimacy there, but there sometimes can be a privacy there. And we may not be talking about it with our neighbors, our community members, et cetera. And so to have other people who understand their experience and where you can talk about the range of emotions that come up in the caregiving experience. I've felt them all. Most people have. Some parts are beautiful and fill your heart, and some parts are awful. And you need ways to process all of that. So that mental wellness piece is another piece that caregivers need. But they also talk regularly with us, whether it's through our research or calls to the helpline or whatever it is, about the practical supports that they need, the financial support from their employers, you know, those things that functionally are going to make their lives easier. And so we work at OCO, not just on those direct to caregiver programs and services, but within the system to raise awareness that, hey, if you are a manager or an employer, statistically, the chances are you have working caregivers in your workplace. So how can you be a more caregiver friendly workplace and to increase awareness around financial supports that are available for caregiver leaves of absence that are possible, those kinds of things, because we hear from caregivers who run into challenging situations and they didn't know at the right time what supports were available to them. So those practical things, we still have some work to do in that area.
When you talk about what caregivers say that they want and need, has anyone ever mentioned, because this is our experience, that having a good big picture roadmap of what this particular condition or illness that their loved one has is going to look like over time would help them to stay two steps ahead? What chapters is this illness going to go through? How will I identify when the person is moving from one stage to another stage? Dare I ask, how long am I going to be a caregiver for? What's the average life expectancy? I mean, these are all things that sometimes make caregivers feel very guilty about asking. But in my experience, it's been a real huge missing piece for caregivers. They're operating without that big picture view of what the illness is going to look like and how it's going to unfold. Aside from needing respite and financial support and time off work and all of these other things, like, could someone please just tell me what is the roadmap for Parkinson's? What, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few critical elements to what you just described. One is, how do you plan for the unexpected? Or what things can we expect that we can plan for when there still will be unexpected kinds of components, right? And you know, this is, I think, one of the big things that caregivers need is, look, there are going to be day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year, a lot of things I can't control. A lot of things I can't know ahead of time. But if there are things that I can plan for, that I can educate myself about, that I can start to shore up my resources, then that gives me that sense of stability and security, which I think is one of the things that the roadmap that you're describing enables is, all right, then I have a little bit more flex in my life for the things that, you know, I can't necessarily plan for. But the other thing that I think that gives to people is this sense of not being alone or not being the only one. Like, if you can share with them a roadmap to say, look, we don't know what your specific experience is going to be like, and there's a ton of variables, but other people who may have gone down this journey before have experienced this or have noted this or have reached these kinds of milestones. You know, that loneliness and isolation piece comes a lot from, I don't know anybody else like me. I don't know anybody else who's had this experience, or I've never had this experience before. So how do I know? And so to have a place where they can look, or, you know, that can provide them with information and support around, you're not alone, you're not the only one, that's a nugget that I think comes out of what you were just saying around the roadmap, right? Is just taking it out of this quiet place that we don't talk about into shining the light on it and saying, you know, here's something that might help. And it shows that you're not the only one.
Absolutely. In many ways, as you were talking, caregiving is it's almost a universal experience, just like dying is. I mean, I guess how much you want to step into that role, but I can't imagine anyone living, you know, a life where they aren't going to have some connection with someone whom they act as a caregiver, even as a parent or as a or an uncle to a niece. I mean, that there's parts of that that have an element of being a caregiver, or looking for a neighbor, or someone across the street, or your parents or grandparents, or any of the above. Like, these, this role is universal, and it's just it's, you know, when we say only, you know, one in four Canadians, I'm like, no, all Canadians are going to have to walk this road at some point. And it's just how much they want to step into that role or not. At the beginning, you were mentioning some of these statistics of the programs. I'd love to give a little bit more detail about some of the programs and services you offer, maybe a specific or a couple of specific examples of the kinds of things. If someone were to check out your website, like, what kinds of services and programs do you offer?
Yeah, so people can visit our website at ontariocaregiver.ca, and that is going to be the portal into everything that we have to offer. We have a line number on there, obviously. We also have a live chat Monday to Friday, and people can come and chat with somebody about their specific issues if they don't want to call the helpline. But we also have information on all of the different supports that caregivers can access. And some of those are things where it's kind of in real time with the person, right? So you can register for the live webinar. You can register for a longer extended time program like our SCALE program, which is focused on caregiver learning and empowerment. There we talk about things like the emotions of caregiving and that kind of thing. And the SCALE program includes a learning component. It includes a group component if you want to participate in some of that, as well as some individual counseling if you want to do that. So people can kind of choose their own pathway through SCALE. And sometimes we have people who come back and do SCALE every time we offer it, twice a year, right? Then we have our peer mentorship, which is a great way to get matched with someone who may have had a similar or relatable experience. And you can build that relationship over time through your, you know, the dialogue method that works for you. Or you can join a peer support group and connect with a variety of other people who may have different caregiving experiences. Another one that's been really popular lately is our caregiver coaching. And the caregiver coaching is really practical. It's working on some of those practical considerations that people may need to balance work and care and family, or the diversity of caregiving responsibility and commitments that they have. And so people find if they come in with a higher level of overwhelm or burnout at the start of coaching, we want them to leave with a reduction in those things and some really concrete action items that they can take away as a plan. So the other thing I recognize is there are caregivers, I'm probably one of them, who just wants to do these things self-directed, right? So I want to pick the podcast I want to listen to. I want to pick the webinar replay. I want to just look at the toolkit on the thing that's relevant for me. So we have a way that you can move through a digital experience with us, find the information that you need, and never have to interact with anybody. And that's fine too. Then you can do that at 2 a.m., right? If that's your window. And it also can move with you through the caregiving experience. You know, you guys talked about this in terms of the roadmap. Caregivers might find us at the very beginning of their experience and need that caregiver 101 kind of support. We've got that literally caregiver 101, right? Or it may be somebody who's been a caregiver for 15 years and, you know, they know how to do the day-to-day of it, but it's about like, how do I keep the gas in the tank? Because my caregiving journey is ongoing and I'm balancing all of these things is ongoing. So our goal is to have something for everybody, but also something over time as the journey evolves for you as a caregiver.
One of the challenges we have found is, on some level, because you're trying to reach such a broad audience, there's sort of, you have to make the information a little bit generic. And so how much have you, the tension between giving like disease specific information, say for Alzheimer's versus say cancer or medically complex children, which is a little bit different versus sort of the kinds of programs that you offer that, you know, anyone can access. Like there's, I think there's sort of, sometimes there's a tension between offering information that is a broad umbrella that captures everyone and would be of general use for everyone, but also there's caregiver needs that are very specific to their disease. And so how do you balance those two different sides of the equation?
Well, you're certainly, you know, providing a window into the kinds of thought bubbles that happen in my head on a regular basis around that. You know, first off, I would say, we will refer and defer to organizations who are focused on those specific kinds of things, cancer, Alzheimer's, medically complex kids, whatever it might be, right? So we would happily refer out through our helpline or through links on our website to those orgs so that people can find those condition type specific pieces. But there is this kind of inextricable tethering of those things to your caregiving journey. So, you know, you're right that one size doesn't fit all. And this is one of the things we grapple with the information we share and the programming that we have. So we have some of those things that are universal to every caregiver at different stages of their caregiving journey, potentially. But then we want those places where it's very relatable to your experience. So our webinars are an example, right, of a place where you might just want to sign up for this webinar because it is on Alzheimer's. It's on caregiving and Alzheimer's. So come and sign up for that or watch the playback or check out some of the short form content that we've pulled out from that, right? Mm-hmm. Or you might want to match with a peer mentor who you know has that experience of caring for someone with that same cancer diagnosis, for example. Mm-hmm. So it is a combination in a way, but I want to add one other kind of complexity or nuance to this, which is what are some of the particular other commonalities that caregivers might have. Cultural is one of them, right? Mm-hmm. Different cultures think about caregiving or don't think about caregiving in different ways. There might be different cultural expectations. So one of the pieces of work that we're doing right now is on making resources available in different languages, working with communities around what is the cultural context to this. So not just a translation of here's your caregiver 101 piece, but what does this mean to different cultural communities and what are languages does this need to be available in? How is this unique to LGBTQ plus caregivers who might have a different experience or Black caregivers who might have a different experience? And so considering some of those other nuances related to identity and community that people might be thinking about as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm just baffled at the fact that I've been working for 20 years and haven't been pointing people towards the, you know, caregiving organization. I mean, this podcast is for, you know, it's an international podcast, but specifically we're talking about Canada and Ontario right now. But so, you know, same with the Canadian Virtual Hospice, there is a marketing challenge, really, right? And it speaks to CN's question about who's accessing these resources. And why do I, as a doctor, not know about these resources? I do now, don't worry, you'll be flooded now. But it's humbling.
Hey, listeners, you're halfway through the episode. We want to remind you that our book, Hope for the Best, Plan for the Rest, is available anywhere you buy books. Did you know you can leave a review on Amazon without purchasing directly from Amazon? All you need is an account. Reviews help others find our book when they need it most. Thanks for your support, and lots more of this great episode left, so keep listening.
You know, it's interesting that you bring this up, and there are people doing this work across the country, in other countries. And so, you know, for your international audience, I would strongly recommend that they figure out what are the resources in their local area that they can refer to. You know, even our pan-Canadian colleagues, the other caregiver organizations, we don't have one in every province or territory yet, but, you know, take a look at what is there and available. And certainly people can visit our website. They don't have to be just in Ontario. To check out the information that's there. But you raise such an important point, and you've done this already in the conversation about, you know, the training and the information that healthcare providers have, right? Mm-hmm. And what do they need to know about caregivers? And in my vision of the future, there'd be two pieces that would be different in the world based on what you talked about. One is that caregivers would be acknowledged and a part of training for healthcare providers, for doctors, for nurses, for nurse practitioners, you know, PSWs, that people would recognize that caregivers are a part of the care team, right? We're doing a whole other piece of work right now on essential care partners, right? Mm-hmm. And recognizing caregivers as an essential part of the care team. And mm-hmm. it's so vital. Yeah. But the other piece is when people have that privilege of going into the home like you do, whether mm-hmm. it's for palliative care, home care, et cetera, mm-hmm. that they come in and they say, hey, you're the caregiver. Here's your, mm-hmm. here's your fridge magnet, right? Mm-hmm. With the website and the helpline. Mm-hmm. And it's really about that handoff. And I mm-hmm. hope that we will reach a point in time at, in primary care or at the time that someone receives a diagnosis, right? Mm-hmm. That they would say, you know, you may want to connect to your caregiver, or if the caregiver is sitting there, you may want to connect, start now. Because part of what we want to do is get ahead of burnout. Mm-hmm. People get burnt out because they don't have access to the resources and supports that they need early mm-hmm. enough, right? Mm-hmm. Or just enough, period. But mm-hmm. if we can get to them earlier, then we can provide that scaffolding. And mm-hmm. there are, you know, groups around the world who are doing amazing mm-hmm. work in supporting caregivers.
I feel like, honestly, we're kindred spirits, all three of us, because you are speaking the language of our waiting room revolution, our social movement, which is to prepare people for what we know the role is going to look like and how the illness is going to, the rhythm of it, the cadence of it, the chapters of it, the transition points, all of it, that these things should not be sorted out in a crisis when everyone is overwhelmed. It's about preparing ahead of time and normalizing some of this. As you're talking, I'm also, you know, sometimes you make connections in your own brain, but I really have been doing a lot of thinking about the fact that Sienna and I ultimately are trying to put the person, the human, back into the equation of healthcare. And whether that's the patient or that's the caregiver, that this is supposed to be very human-centered care, yeah. and should feel that. And a person going through an illness and the caregiver should come out the other end still recognizing themselves and not feel like they have been reduced to something. And what I appreciate so much about working with caregivers, and I think this was highlighted in COVID in the pandemic, was that one of the most important functions of caregivers is that they actually take what would be a more conveyor belt type of care or standard care, and they personalize it. They help personalize the journey for their loved one by being around and making sure that everyone knows, you know, this is how my loved one likes this done, or, you know, we do it this way in our home, or here's pictures of my loved one, and this is my loved one's name. Like, without the family or the caregiver community wrapped around that person, in our current healthcare environment, they're going to get less personalized care. That to me is very profound, actually, that it's not just task oriented, that they are the critical ingredient to make sure that this human is treated like a unique person.
You know, I totally agree with you on everything you just said. And I think that, you know, this is something that caregivers do often without thinking about it, right? Yeah. And this is why it isn't just about the functions of care, right?
Right.
Because that caregiver has a relationship with the person that they care for, and they want to ensure that whole person is whole, is treated as
whole. Is considered, yeah.
But the natural extension to that is that the same is true for the caregiver.
Yes.
You know, and I think this is something that we hear as a source of frustration for caregivers mm-hmm. is, you know, for example, the discharge meeting is planned and everybody else gets coordinated into that. And I maybe don't. Right. Yeah. But again, I'm going to be critical to the discharge plan. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Or you know, people who are, I've had this experience myself. You're afraid to go to the bathroom or go mm-hmm. and eat a meal when you're in the ER, because what if it's that critical nodal point when the doctor's going to show yeah. up or whatever, yeah. whatever the situation is. And so how do we recognize that caregivers are whole people who have mm-hmm. to balance these things with their jobs, with their families, with their other personal commitments, including mm-hmm. their own wellness, right? Mm-hmm. And when we think about what's happening with burnout, the thing that people do is what's the first thing to go on the list? My own wellness commitment to yeah. myself, right? Yeah. Eating, sleeping, exercising, whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? And yet, if I don't prioritize those things, mm-hmm. it's actually going to stop me from being able to fulfill mm-hmm. my caregiving commitments and mm-hmm. responsibilities and other things probably too. Exactly. And so how do we build a more caregiver friendly system, healthcare system, but mm-hmm. caregiver friendly world that mm-hmm. says, look, as CN said earlier, you know, this is a part of life. Mm-hmm. You've probably done it before and not realized that you were a caregiver. And if you haven't, it's probably coming at some point in some mm-hmm. relationship in some way. And some caregiving relationships are more intensive than others at different times or based on what it is. But this is a natural part of life. Mm-hmm. And so how do we make this work in the context of whole people, mm-hmm. whole patients or residents or, mm-hmm. or whatever their context is, but whole caregivers who mm-hmm. generally speaking really want to be able to do this, but have to find a way to make it work.
When the people who are reaching out to the OCO now, are they mostly at the beginning of their journey, the mm-hmm. middle, or you know, after a crisis near the end? I mean, are they finding them when they're already burnt out and overwhelmed, or are you succeeding in getting to them earlier?
I'd say both are true. You know, mm-hmm. we're succeeding at getting to more people earlier. You know, mm-hmm. you acknowledge we're a relatively young organization. So, you know, we can't help it if we didn't exist when people started in their caregiving journey. Mm-hmm. So we are getting to more people earlier as awareness increases. And Sammy, you talked earlier about the marketing challenge we all have. Yeah. That's yeah. real, right? Yeah. How do you kind of cut through the noise to get mm-hmm. to people, right? Mm-hmm. And how do you get out of the echo chamber? This is mm-hmm. the other big thing that I'm yes. asking the question about all the time. Because the people who know us, who are constantly coming back, we're glad to have them. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I worry about is the people who don't know us, mm-hmm. who don't know that there's supports out there, who don't know that they're a caregiver, mm-hmm. right? So we are getting to more people sooner, but we know it's not everybody. And then we certainly have people who fit into that category of, you know, I'm burnt out. And mm-hmm. and they may be burnt out. This is the other thing we're seeing in the data that I think is super interesting, and not in a good way, is we are seeing people reach that stage of burnout sooner. Mm-hmm. And that's really concerning because, you know, I think that we can't underestimate, and caregivers tell us this, the impact of those health system pressures, right? Mm-hmm. And wait times and the role that caregivers play around system navigation and mm-hmm. the increasing role that they tell us they are playing around making sure that the person that they care for is receiving adequate and correct care.
And
right?
safe.
So,
and
yeah, safe. Right, exactly. You know, caregivers are risk managers, yes. right? Around medication mm-hmm. or other forms of treatment. And so, you know, what I think is important to recognize around the seven keys, let's use connecting the dots and invite yourself as examples, because mm-hmm. I think it's relevant here, but across the board too. Mm-hmm. There's labor involved in that. Mm-hmm. And so you hope that you're going to get the return on that labor. Yeah. And I would offer that it's well worth the investment. You're going to get mm-hmm. the return, but it's work sometimes mm-hmm. to have mm-hmm. to, like, in each context, invite yourself. Yeah. And part of what we're hoping to do, so this is where hopefully we meet each other in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. You have your love letter to caregivers. I love that around mm-hmm. invite yourself. And we want to work with health system partners to say, recognize caregivers as a yeah. partner in care. So yes. if they keep inviting themselves and you keep welcoming them to the table, we shorten the distance mm-hmm. between the two so that caregivers don't have to work so hard to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll give you an example. My dad was in the hospital recently. I will spare you the things that I wish could have been different. I'll tell you just mm-hmm. about one. Mm-hmm. We finally get out of the ER into a room, and there's a beautiful whiteboard on the wall with all the pre-populated information that you're then they're going to fill in. This is your doctor. This is your therapist. This is your da 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 da. This is the one section of the whiteboard of the many parts is, this is my care team. Mm-hmm. Now, ask me how many times I saw the word caregiver on that beautiful whiteboard.
Did you put Amy on that whiteboard?
Well, I could have wedged a place in, but nowhere on that board did it say my caregiver is, right? Mm-hmm. My caregiver's contact info is, mm-hmm. or my crew, my circle of care, whatever you call them, is this. And it was a disheartening moment because a group of people clearly had put a lot of thought into lots of different things. My healthcare goals are, there were lots of different pieces of it. But the word caregiver was completely absent from this poster size whiteboard of things. Mm-hmm. And that means that when I have to invite myself as a caregiver, I have to do more work to bridge the gap. Yeah. But if every time somebody else was looking at that board and was like, okay, wait, who's the care? Are you the caregiver? Yeah, I'm the caregiver. I have to work a lot less hard to be recognized as a caregiver. And I think this is the thing where we have to meet in the middle with that evolution in the healthcare system to say, yeah, we know we cannot do this without caregivers. They're the backbone, actually, of the whole equation.
Yeah. You know, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to stand and clap. Yeah. You know, I think the healthcare system assumes that the term caregiver is equal to the substitute decision maker, is equal to the next of kin. Like, they just think that's all one person, and they mind themselves more with who's going to make decisions for this person, as opposed to who's caring for this person, who's really part of, you know what I mean? Or who is the next of kin? Cause we have to medical legally, from a risk management perspective, inform them of something, but still, like, no acknowledgement that there is this informal care team at work and at play that could really make your life easier, you know, on both sides of the equation. So yeah, it's a big problem. And yeah.
The other thing is, and you really highlight this in the work that you're doing, and I think it's so important. Oftentimes it is more than one caregiver. It is that crew, right? Yeah. And so how do we recognize that there are different people playing different roles, and not only normalize that in society, like, I want to help, but maybe I can't do everything for this individual, but I can drive them to appointments, and that makes me part of the crew, right? Yeah. And then there might be somebody else who can do something else. And so whether it's a family or a group of friends or a combination of people, you know, recognizing that there are different roles that people can and want and need to play. But that's, you know, that's relevant for healthcare providers too, because if you want somebody to show up to treatment, or you want somebody to do their follow-up, you know, piece, or you also want someone to have support when resources are not available, chances are it's a caregiver or someone as a part of the crew. And this, I think, is one of the contributing factors for people right now, is when there are waits or gaps in healthcare provision that they need, the caregiver is stepping in, and we need to recognize them for doing that. And we need to recognize them for the vital role that they're playing in doing so.
I think many caregivers also don't realize, for many situations, that the care is going to eventually be quite intimate care. And, you know, some people find themselves a caregiver or have stepped up to be a caregiver and don't realize how that's going to change over time, and might not be the right person or want to be that in that role when there is a time where someone needs very private, intimate care. Maybe the loved one wouldn't want the daughter as the caregiver any longer. And so there's this whole, you know, need for more intimate care, this transition period, where I think it is for many caregivers a huge awakening, and often a transition point that needs, I think, sensitivity and planning around.
I totally agree. And this is why I think one of the most important things that we can emphasize over and over again is the communication and the planning, yeah. right? Comes back to the roadmap piece too, yeah. right? If you receive a certain type of diagnosis where you can say, well, you know, the general trajectory is this, mm-hmm. then it should support those kinds of planning, sometimes uncomfortable, undesirable types of conversations. But if you mm-hmm. if you know that it's going that way, to have those kinds of discussions, or even the what if it goes this way or that way, yeah. how do we want to handle that? It's so much easier to deal with that with the framework of your thinking beforehand mm-hmm. than right when you arrive at that point or right mm-hmm. when you arrive at a crisis. But yeah. the other thing that you pointed out, and we cannot underestimate the importance of this, is choice. Mm-hmm. Choice for the caregiver, but yeah. also choice for the person who's receiving care.
Yes.
You know, I want to receive care from this person in this way and not mm-hmm. from that person. Mm-hmm. That's a choice we have to respect. Mm-hmm. And there can be discomfort in that sometimes. Yeah. And similarly, choice for a caregiver who says, you know, I can and I'm willing to do this, this, and this, but not willing to do yeah. this, yeah. this, and this. There's a healthy boundaries conversation. Yeah. And that has to be factored into planning. Because if mm-hmm. we know that some of those more intimate forms of care are coming down the road, we better have a plan for who mm-hmm. might do it or who might not, based on the respective choices of those involved, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So Amy, this episode is dropping during Caregiver Aware Month in Canada, which is a month that is bringing attention to the critical role of caregivers and how to support them. So my question to you is, what do you wish Canadians knew about caregivers?
Oh, that's such a great question. So during this month, I wish Canadians knew that they are your family members, friends, and neighbors, right? Mm-hmm. And the number of times that I have conversations with people and they realize they themselves are already a caregiver is frequent. Mm-hmm. So I wish Canadians knew that this was a normal thing happening right in front of them, right? That mm-hmm. that's probably one of the things that I wish that they knew. Another thing I wish that Canadians knew is that our healthcare system cannot function without caregivers. We absolutely rely in a very silent way in many ways mm-hmm. on caregivers, but they are integral to our system and to the individual outcomes for people, yes. right? Yes. So I really wish Canadians knew that more commonly, more frequently. Mm-hmm. And I also wish that they knew that we would all benefit from more conversation about this. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. one of those things. It is a part of life, no matter what your life experience mm-hmm. and trajectory may be. You know, generally in our society, there's a lot of people uncomfortable with, you know, illness or death. But if we can normalize conversations about those kinds of things, then we can also normalize conversations about caregiving and how we mm-hmm. make this work for mm-hmm. individuals, within families, within communities, mm-hmm. within workplaces. This is a conversation we all need to be having.
Sian and I talk about the fact that there is a huge need for a public health approach to like a population approach to, you know, mortality awareness. And while that's happening and going to take some time, there are people stepping into the role of being a patient right now, and they need the support, and same with caregivers, but both have to happen. So we have to try at a population level to raise awareness and do education. And we also have to, while waiting for that to happen, deal with the here and now. And I feel like caregiving is the same thing. Caregiving can benefit, it sounds like, from what you're saying, from a huge population approach, whatever that means. Public health approach should be part of the curriculum in high school. And you don't just learn how to knit and bake cookies, but that you learn and hold a baby, you know, how they go through that parenting kind of. My daughter had to come home with a baby I don't know, like a doll that would cry at night so that she wasn't tempted to have a baby at a young age. But anyway, but, you know, I think that our curriculum could have a role, you know, in education about preparing people for this life role that they're going to have as well, like at a population level, just normalize it from in home economics or whatever those courses are that they take. Like, it has to be both. We have to help the people right now and who are coming down the pipeline as caregivers, but we want to change the future for other caregivers by making sure we go at it from a population perspective as well, which is what you're doing also. You're helping care for the people that are becoming caregivers and are caregivers, but you're also doing a lot of advocacy around policy and things like that as well. So it's so incredibly important what you're doing. I'm grateful.
One more layer to what you're talking about, and that is to connect with professionals who are working today, not only healthcare providers in increasing mm-hmm. that awareness of caregivers and including them as a part of the care team, recognizing them, connecting with them with support, but then also people in other workplaces, right? Mm-hmm. Around that piece of mm-hmm. your caregivers are here, they're amongst you. Mm-hmm. And how can we have those friendly HR policies, those caregiver friendly mm-hmm. employers? Mm-hmm. If we come at it from all of these angles, yeah. then hopefully we build a bit of a net where we yeah. catch as many people as possible, wherever mm-hmm. they are across a continuum, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. You give me hope. It's a dangerous thing to have hope yeah. because Amy, you don't yeah. want to fall from it.
Well, no, but we all want to be working towards something that we think is going to make a difference, right? That's mm-hmm. what's hopeful, and not sort of going backwards or stuck in the same, because we're all still working. And so let's work in the same direction. I think that's mm-hmm. how we can make a difference. Amy, it's been great to chat with you today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It really has been an incredible conversation. And, you know, my philosophy on these things is that until every caregiver has everything they need, then we all have to play our role with our creative solutions and our activities to get them the support and the information mm-hmm. and those structural enablers to get what they need. So I've really, really appreciated this conversation to move that dialogue forward.
Yeah, same. I'm have new motivation to identify caregivers out there yeah. and to point them towards your direction.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. Visit our website, waitingroomrevolution.com, for more information, to join our newsletter, and to check out our book, Hope for the Best, Plan for the Rest. This podcast is produced by myself, Kayla McMillan, Shilpa Jyothi Kumar, and Maggie Seema. And our theme music is Maypole by Tessa.